Now, an altar, strictly speaking, is a place where you meet God. An altar doesn't have to be in church. Here we concentrate on God's Word, and we depend upon God's Spirit collectively, and sometimes there is a conducive atmosphere in which to meet God. But the sad thing is that many a sincere person who comes to the altar and really does mean it, leaves the altar to flunk out in a week, a month, maybe at outset, a couple of months. They come in all sincerity. They come in all earnestness. I noticed a while ago when Danny asked, he said, "You're a different person than you were last year." There wasn't a real big enthusiasm around here. There wasn't a well in spirit that you can feel when there's a well in spirit, you know, as if hundreds of people, because they're not thousands, there's more. Yes, yeah. Praise God. You didn't say it out loud, but I'm a new person. There wasn't that well in spirit. There was a hush. And rightly so, because a lot of you said, "I've tried, but boy, I'm just no different than I was a year ago. Things just are not, they're just the same, or they're even worse." What? I don't understand this. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's wrong. But I'm starting this morning a message. I really believe it's from the Lord that will last between 6 and 10 weeks, and probably be included at night as well as in the morning. And we have communion tonight. Tonight will be a very important part of this message. You can pick it up. But the essence of this message is this. You are doomed to failure when you come to the altar, to lay your all on the altar, if you don't take what God's got at the altar for you back when you leave the altar. It's one thing to give up everything to God. It's another thing to take everything that God has to offer. And when you leave the altar, you are doomed to failure, no matter how sincere and how earnest and how concerned you are, unless you pick up at the altar what God has for you at the altar. Now, when I tell you what God has for you at the altar, it's going to take something to come to the altar. There's three things that God has, three pieces of equipment. Of course, you understand that these are spiritual equipment, but they can be symbolized well. If you come to the altar and lay your all on the altar, and that's the only way to come to the altar. There's no coming to any altar until you come in full surrender to God and say, "God, I'm a mess. Here am I. I give myself to you." The trouble is we don't stop long enough at the altar to listen to what God has to say to us. And one of the things God says to us, "I appreciate you coming and telling me you're a mess. I knew it all along. And I'm glad you found it out. Now, you've given yourself to me, and you're starting out into life, and I know what you're going to need in life. Let me give to you three pieces of equipment that you're going to need. The first is a cross." Jesus said, "Except a man pick up his cross and follow me, he cannot be my disciple." We'll be talking about what the cross means, but I'll tell you one thing it means. Very simply, it means death. So you've got to pick up an instrument of death. Then the second instrument you've got to pick up is a yoke. Oh, you mean I got to be yoked? I want to be free. Well, don't come to the altar if you want to be free in your terms of freedom. There's no freedom at the altar. There's a yoke at the altar. Already something's sitting up inside you, isn't it? Garbage. Foolishness. I don't want it. Well, don't come to his altar. Go to some other altar. There's a cross. And there's a yoke. And then there is a bowl. And a jug of water. And we're going to read about that this morning. You see, if you leave the altar without these three things, you'll never miss. And you'll make trip after trip after trip to the altar, and you'll leave in the same way to last a week or a month or a day or whatever it might be. And after a while, you will throw up your hands and say, it's no use. It never makes any difference. You don't want to come to the altar? You don't want to be a Christian? You mean, I can't be a Christian without... No, no chance in the world. Not a ghost of a chance. Oh, you have your name on the church. Oh, did you know the church is the easiest thing to join today and the hardest thing to get out of? They won't kick you out for anything. Some of you are living in here terrible lives. You haven't been kicked out of the church yet. You can join any church. Easiest thing to get. The Rotary Club has more discipline than the church does. That's tragic. It needs to be changed. So much for that. If you want to be a real Christian, you want to count up yonder. Well, you have to do two things. You have to come to the altar and give all you've got and leave the altar and take all he's got. And he offers you a cross and a yoke and a jug of water. It's the same thing about the prodigal son. Remember when the prodigal son came tripping home? Remember the little speech he made? He said, Dad, I've done wrong. I'm sorry. I want to come home and I'll be a servant. And his daddy said, no such thing. I forgive you for wrong you've done, but you can't be a servant. And his daddy gave him three things, a robe, a ring, and a set of shoes. And in the symbolism of the scriptures, they're exactly the same things as these three things represent right here. A robe, a ring, and a set of shoes. He said, you're going to be my son. You've got to wear the robe and the ring and use the set of shoes. And they stand exactly for what these three things stand for here. I preach to you out of the context of one of the hardest weeks in my life. I told my wife yesterday, I said it though after I'd really made a decision in my soul. I said, I wonder whether it's really worth it all. I've seen myself. That's horrible. That's enough to make a weak back. I mean, the kind of self you really are underneath all of the veneer. I've got kicks in the teeth and my mouth looks bloody, it is. When I'd already asked her that question, I'd already settled it in my heart. As I lay in my bed yesterday afternoon, once again, counted the cost, coming to the altar of Jesus Christ and of the God of the universe, knowing that if I left that altar and meant it, I'd have to take with me a cross, wear a yoke, and you, a jug of water and a basin. Now here's what I want to do, because I feel like this is the way God would have me to approach it, the best I know his will for this situation. I want to start with a jug of water today and talk to you about that. For this reason, when you understand what the jug of water is, you'll never be able to carry out what it represents without the yoke. And then when you understand what the yoke is, you'll realize that a yoke is useless without a jug of water, and you'll also realize that a yoke cannot be worn without a cross. And that these three things are tied together into one. Let's look at John chapter 13 together. We're going to start reading in verse 3. Now I want to give you the situation here. This is right prior to Good Friday. This is Thursday night. Now, I want you to see Jesus. For 30 years, he's run a race. 33 years. 33 years before, he had left glory and given up everything that was rightfully his, willingly and voluntarily, and come down to this earth and lived a life. Well, you know a little bit about it, and I know a little bit about it from the gospel. And now, it's on the eve of those events that would return him to glory and to kingship. And he knows, listen to me, he He knew that God had elected him to be King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He was near the end of the race. He was where he could see the finishing line. He was putting out that last effort to do the will of God with the cross. But he could see the finish line. And when you can see the finish line, and when you know it's there, and when you know you've won, you can make it. And he knew what kind of reward there was going to be after the cross and after the resurrection, that God was going to crown him King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Now, he knew all of that because it says so in verse 3. It says, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand and that he was come from God and went to God. Now, I want you to get it. He's sitting around with his 12 lieutenants. And he said, now, fellas, he said, I have been elected to be the big shot, and I want you guys to shape up now or ship out. He says, I want to tell you all what to do. Now, this is what he said. This is what he did. He rises from supper, and laid aside his garment, and took a towel, girded himself, and after he poured water into a basin, he began to wash his disciples' feet, to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. He came to Simon Peter, and Peter said to him, Lord, you will wash my feet too? And Jesus said to him, what I do you don't know right now, but you'll understand afterwards. And Peter said to him, you'll never wash my feet. And Jesus answered and said unto him, if I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Now, I don't want to discuss the little argument he had with Peter here, the little discussion. I want to get the big issue, so skip on down to verse 12. So after he had washed their feet and taken his garments and was set down again, he said unto them, do you know what I have done to you? He said, do you understand what I've done? He said, you call me Master and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you ought also to wash one another's feet, for I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, a servant is not greater than his Lord, neither is he sent greater than he that sent him. If you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. Now, let me give you the setting that's impossible for us to understand in this circumstances without some description. In Jesus' day, it was a customary service, if you could afford it, when someone came into your house to wash their feet. Now, they wore sandals, and they came off of dusty roads, and I'm sure that you have had this experience after working out in the garden or something and your feet were filthy and you've had the wonderful relief of sitting on the edge of a bathtub and taking the faucet or sitting outside and taking the hose and washing off your feet and getting all that dirt out. If you haven't had that feeling, you ought to go home there and get them dirty and just try it. Get them sweaty and then muddy and then wash them off and have that blessed feeling of know what that release comes from it. See, it's just a courtesy of good manners to do it. But here's the catch to the whole story. I really believe this is the catch to the whole story. You see, this, you know, I mean, after all, it isn't a very nice job to wash other people's feet at best. And in the household, the lowest slave would do this job. The glass guy hired on. The lowest guy in the totem pole would wash feet. Can you imagine, too, be consigned to wash feet of all the weary travelers that came in. Now Jesus is saying, hey, fellas, you say you want to follow me? You got to get a jug and a basin and go to it. Jesus, you are going to be King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and we're going to be your lieutenants. We thought you'd have him bossing folks around. Oh, no, you don't understand. If you serve me, in my kingdom, things are done a little different. We don't boss people around. We serve them. We wash their feet. Still want to be a Christian? You see, if you come to the altar without understanding that you leave the altar to serve, and to serve in a foot-washing capacity, you'll never make it. You know why he wants us to serve him? It's really good when you understand it. You know why he wants us to serve him? Because there's no better way to know a person than to go through what he's gone through. There's no better way to understand a person. There's no better way to appreciate. You know, somebody says, you won't understand me till you've walked in my shoes. And that's true. We don't really know what a person's like till we've walked in their shoes. You ever talk to somebody? You couldn't get through to them, but somebody came along that had walked in their shoes and just got right through to them because they'd walked in their shoes. Now, you want to get, you say, oh, I want to know Jesus. I want to know Jesus. Well, the best way to know Jesus is to walk in his shoes. And if you walk in his shoes, you're going to have to foot wash. This is not just service. This is lowly service. This is the kind of service that nobody else wants to do. I don't know exactly how to equate this for today. I don't understand all of it, but I know this. He said, if I've done it, you do it. Over and over again, there were influences and other ways of saying this. He said, I didn't come to be ministered unto. I came to minister. He said, you want to be big, then get down and serve. He said, you want to be biggest, then become the lowliest slave of all. He'll show you one of the things. Let me tell you the good news. Well, it's not really good news, but it's good news if you know it ahead of time. And that's this. That about three quarters of the people whose feet you wash are going to kick you in the teeth. Bow! Take it! And you haven't got it yet. You haven't been to the altar. And you say, well, if that's the way they feel, I'm going to quit. You don't understand the altar. You haven't been there. Or you haven't listened to him, what he had to say. And that's why you're disappointed and frustrated. And some of you are upset. Bah! You say it isn't humanly possible to serve like that. No, it isn't humanly possible. That's why you need to learn about the yoke and the cross. And you learn about that. It isn't humanly possible. You say, how do you keep on when somebody kicks you in the teeth when you're serving them? Well, there's one basic secret to it, and it's this. Just remember who you're serving. You say, Lord, you didn't tell me that fella had a heavy right foot. But you said, wash him now. Go on washing it. As you wipe the blood away, you need to remember that you're serving him. You are doing it to these people, but you're doing it for him. And when you keep your eyes on him, you'll keep washing the feet when they kick you in the teeth. There's a lady. Literally dozens of people in this church have helped sacrifice. I feel like I have to join these people in helping her. Oh, to see her, you'd think she were an angel. She might be, I'm not just sure which kind. But you know right now what she's doing? She's turning around and kicking in the teeth the people that have helped her and done the most for her. You say, preacher, you think we should have helped her? Yes! Keep doing it. You're doing it for him, not for her. Love her. Let her keep kicking. She'll answer to him, and he'll answer to you. We're not washing her feet for her sake. We're washing her feet for his sake. There are three signs that a person understands the jug as a piece of equipment necessary for service. Three signs of service. Let me give them to you. The first one is that you do it joyfully. Praise the Lord. I've got an opportunity to serve him. Out you go to wash feet. I don't know what washing feet will do for you. You might be a person without children, and washing feet for you might be changing dirty diapers in the nursery so squalling babies can be kept there while we are having Christian service. But you haven't been to the altar if your attitude is, let them who have the children take care of us. You ought to go to the nursery and say, praise the Lord. I won't get a chance. Now, this is if God calls you to this kind of stuff. Praise the Lord. I won't get a chance to wash feet this morning. And you go in the nursery, and guess who's in the nursery? The child of the person you dislike the most. You say, Lord, what an opportunity. I'm just so glad you gave me a chance to wash me. Hooray! I'm going to pin her diaper more carefully than anybody else's diaper. Now, you got the spirit, sister, when you start to serve and wash feet with joy. Joy in washing feet is a secret that you've been to the altar. There's a second sign. It's called quality. Anybody who's been to the altar is going to do a better job washing feet than somebody who's paid $40 an hour to wash feet. You can't buy the kind of service that comes away from the altar because a person is doing it for him, and to do it for one you love is worth more than $40. Woo. When I see shoddy Christians getting by with teaching Sunday school and keeping the nursery and anything else and washing feet, I know they haven't been to the altar. Because when you've been to the altar and understand the equipment you've got at the altar, you don't only pin that diaper on your enemy's baby with joy, you just a little more powder on. And you check her twice as often as you check the other. You just do an A1 job. There's a third symbol if you understand what the drug is all about. You don't only do it with joy, and you don't only do it with quality. And here's where it's going to take the most strength of all. You do it with consistency. That means week after week. That means in summer when it's hot and in winter when it's cold. That means when you feel great and when you don't. The sign you have got the Spirit of Jesus. And know what it's all about is that you wash feet cheerfully. You wash it with quality. You get that last little speck of dirt off and say, sir, do you feel okay? Don't bother me. You just pick up those last little specks. And although he kicked you in the teeth the last time you washed his feet, the next time he comes to the house, you wash them again. And you say, I'm just going to do the very very best job I can, and nothing's going to make me quit washing feet. He tells me to quit washing feet, and I tell you when he's going to tell you to quit washing feet. When he says, well done, good and faithful servant, come home. Don't want to be a Christian when you got a lifetime of foot washing people who are going to kick you. 75% of them, that's being conservative, are going to kick you in the teeth. But you're not washing feet for them. You're washing feet for him. You're washing feet, it doesn't make any difference. You're serving him. He say, hey, a little more grace. He says, okay. I saw a most tremendous thing with somebody had said, when you're discouraged and things are bad and things are down and your best friends turn on you and you listen to four or five horrible other things, like I said, here's an excellent prayer to pray. Help. And you know, it works. It really works. Don't want to be a Christian? Don't want to be a Christian? It really takes it. I'm not joking. There's no other way around it. Absolutely, positively, no other way around it. Now, there are two or three problems I want to share with you so you'll understand. The first one I've mentioned is that it's very tough sometimes to get kicked in the teeth. We kept a boy one time. His parents didn't want him. We took him into our home, ministered to him in some way. And you know what he did? He stole our car. did it one Wednesday night prayer meeting. That's right. We all went to prayer meeting, church supper, I think, or something like that. And we were inside and he took off in the car. Say, how ungrateful. That's right, but would you do it again? Yeah! Why? Well, I was doing it for him, not him. I was doing it to him, for him. Sure, do it again. Even if he was going to see me talk to him. Why? Yes. Boss said wash his feet. He's the boss. So I'll wash his feet. You know he's going to do it. Getting kicked in the teeth ain't near so bad when you know you're going to get kicked in the teeth and you're ready for it. Because you keep a handkerchief to wipe away the blood. And you know where to look. And so, well, seek help. There's another problem. And this is the hardest problem. You know, there's one thing harder than washing feet, and I'm going to tell you about it in a minute. But you know why we don't like, you know why Peter didn't want to have his feet washed? It was pride. I could call a little boy out of the audience and say, let me wash your feet. And he'd just swing up here and sit down here and let me wash his feet. You see, that's why Jesus said, except you be converted and become like a little child, you never end. But if I was to get one of you adults out here to do it, you might do it because you wouldn't want to be embarrassed in front of everybody, but something would go up inside of you, especially if you knew you had a hole in your sock and dirty feet. That's pride! I don't need this help. You see, the one thing that's harder than washing feet is having yours washed. But you can't have foot washes without having feet to wash, can you? I mean, right? I mean, just think. I mean, that isn't very complicated. You can't have a bunch of foot washers if there are no feet to wash. And you don't haven't got the right spirit if you're willing to wash feet without having yours washed. But when you come to the altar, the things that sort of walk inside of us that make those sort of things hard, he takes care of. You see, ladies, it's like your willingness, because you're not feeling well, to let your friend come in and clean your dirty oven. And even though you know it's your filthy, you'd be ashamed for the maid to see, you're willing to let your friend clean your dirty oven without any embarrassment at all. But, you know, most of you even clean up the oven before the maid comes. Isn't it exciting? It's crazy. I've come to the ultimate conclusion that somebody's mad, either the Christians or the non-Christians, that somebody's completely cuckoo. It's madness to tell a man who has never met Jesus that when you meet Jesus, you've got to carry a cross and a yoke and something that involves foot washing. He says you're mad. Of course it's mad to a person who's never met Jesus because he's never been affected by Jesus. You and I are going to have our minds and our hearts. One of the men sitting back here is a deacon. He told me, said, you know, it's a funny thing. He's been working out here in the yard. And when you work in the yard, you usually don't get dressed up. You wear a dirty shirt and a dirty pair of pants and shoes with holes in them. He says, you know, I've noticed that while working out here in the yard, people treat me a little bit different. I said, what do you mean? He told me this Friday. He's a deacon sitting back right over here. He said, well, he said, I said hi to some people one day, and they looked at me like, I wonder who he is to speak to me. And he said, the other day some church members passed us. Let's get a little closer. I don't think the other people were church members. We were coming right down our alley now. And they passed him and weren't nice to him. And when they went by and saw it was, all they said, if we'd seen who it was, we'd have spoken to you. You see? When you become a foot washer, they're not going to see who you are. And they might not speak to you. Because that's a lowly job. You're ready to hoop it up and come to the altar and follow Jesus? The most damnable thing in this whole world. The thing that made hell, the thing that makes hell and earth more than any other one thing is pride. The pride that won't let me wash somebody else's feet and the pride that won't let me let somebody else wash my feet. And God said, I believe this with all my heart, that pride is far worse in the sight of God than many of the things that the average person looks down on as being horrible, filthy, dirty things. You want to look at things out of God's viewpoint, and that's the way it's going to be. Then pride is the thing that casts the devil out of heaven And pride is in God's list of seven deadly sins. Well, suppose we have an altar call. Ah, you coming? To give all you've got and take all he's got? You see, it's taking all he's got, then understanding how to use it. It takes some time to learn how to wash feet. Unaccustomed as we, most of us are, to that kind of service. It really is. Well, I made a lot of mistakes washing feet. I didn't know how to use the soap or the rag, you know, and stuff like that. You make a lot of mistakes washing feet. Especially when you're getting kicked and prodded. Hurry up! I haven't got time. I'll tell you something. You'll never do it without him. I told my wife yesterday, after this week, it's been a tough week. Oh, I guess the Lord let me run through some stuff before I preached on it. And I told her yesterday afternoon when she came home, she said, you know, sometimes, to be truthful to you, I'd sort of settle it up in my bed. Before she came in, and I was really rehashing something that I'd just gone through. I said, you know, I wonder whether it's worth it all. Is it really worth it to pick up a cross and a yoke and that? And what's the yoke? Yoke stands for service. What kind of service? Foot washing service. Is it really worth it? The devil told me yesterday. I'm sure it had to be him. They won't listen to that sort of stuff. They won't buy. And you'll be left out there standing all alone. You'll just have to go to it by yourself. Now, you know, one of the most awful things in the world is to have to go something alone. And I tucked my little tail in between my legs and started to feel some self-pity. Until the boss tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, you gonna go it? You want to go it? You still want to wash feet after you've been kicked in the teeth? You still want to go it if you're the only guy in that whole church that's going to go it, and they might even run you out for doing that sort of thing, because it might embarrass some people. They mightn't like it, you know. Because are you willing? Are you still willing to do it? Really want to do it? Well, I can't say that I want to do it, but I do know something. That I've learned if I go by my want to, I won't do very much because I'm basically a selfish, lazy person. So I've turned off my want to. And then I started to figure what it really meant. What it meant was a desperate gamble in life. And, you know what it meant? It meant putting everything on Jesus and taking a chance on him. And somebody give me a little track, and this was how this track started off. I lay on my bed and read it yesterday afternoon. It started out like this. What is life all about? I want everybody to listen. You go to school. Grammar school, junior high, high school. Then maybe you go to college. And somewhere in there you get married and get a job. And you go to work. And you go to work so that you can retire. And after retirement, you die. And I thought to myself, you know, that's true. And you're pretty well along. The way. It won't be long. What are you going to bet your life on? You're going to go back and take it easy and find the course of least resistance. Just do enough. Are you going to gamble on Jesus? Well, I've decided And no matter what the rest of you do. And I don't only mean here, my kinfolk, my friends, that I've decided to bet whatever is left of Peter Lloyd on Jesus. With the understanding that it means a cross and a yoke and a foot washing bowl. When I said that to Mrs. Lloyd yesterday afternoon, I'd really already made my decision. I was just reminiscing over what I've been through. You say, I can't do that. Well, I know you can't without Jesus, and that's why you have to come to the altar. Because, you see, what he does is changes your disposition. I couldn't have done this. I'm too selfish to do this sort of thing. But I came to him and said, help. My disposition needs changing. A precious girl came to my office a while ago. That's why I was late coming out this morning. And she said, in essence, this. She says, I don't want to be like me anymore. I want to be like him. She'd listened to this message. She knew what it cost. And she was making a choice. You say, I don't believe all that stuff. Well, that's up to you. It's in here. Not one place, but 100 places. Jesus said, if I have done this, you ought to do this. And I say, Lord, I can't. He says, that's right. That's why you need to be yoked to me. I said, you mean attached to you for the rest of my life? That where you go, I go. What you do, I do? He said, yeah. I said, Lord, there's an old rebellious me in me that's going to chafe at that thing. He said, that's why I want you to take the cross with you. And if you just apply the cross, you won't have any trouble being yoked to me. And if you're yoked to me, you won't have trouble pulling any foot washing load I give you. There is an altar. Not this one. This one is sacred today because we're endeavoring to meet God here. Would you kneel at the altar under these conditions and say, I've come to give all I've got and take all you've got. I come to give you my sins and take your forgiveness. That's what first thing the prodigal son did. But he gave himself. The father said, you take my robe, my ring, and the set of shoes, and you do what I want you to do. I'm not willing for you to be a slave. You're going to be a son. Are you willing to come and say, Lord, I come to yield my all. I've given you my sins, and I accept your forgiveness. Now I give you myself, and I accept your cross. Now I'll explain to you in the weeks that come what the cross and the yoke and the bowl mean. But I'll accept anything you give me. I'll try to make it as hard as I know how to make it this morning, so if you accept him, you couldn't get any worse. And anything will be an anticipated pleasure after this. Because it will be a bonus over what you expected. Would you still come? Let's pray. You say, oh, there's something inside of me that's rebelling. I understand it. I had the same thing. You say to me, all those things, preacher, you've spoken about this morning, speak to me of bondage and death. And I want liberty and I want life. Well, they speak of that. But there are God's ways to liberty and life. And they're so contrary to the human reason, to the human understanding, to the way of the world. That no human mind can grasp this. Only the Holy Spirit can reveal it. But I'll tell you what. If Jesus is God, then what he said has to be so. And it's worth it all to have him who not only invites us, but changes us and gives us this. And he'll change your disposition.
And if he's not God, it's all a waste of time and a fraud. But there's no middle ground. And for those of you who are serving, 2 years ago I was in Pensacola. There was a serviceman's club there. One of the young sailors coming to the serviceman's club looked the guy in the face that ran it and said, "You're a fool." He said, "You know the only reason these sailors are coming here to get the food and other good things you offer them, they're not the least bit interested in you, God. Why do you continue with this mess of serving God?" He said, "You know the sailors are not going to listen to what you, I'm not going to listen. The only reason I come is to get the food that you offer." And why did he continue? Well, he wasn't doing it for that serviceman. He was doing it to him. He was doing it for God. And since God gave the orders, God would give the reward. And God would give the pay. And so he was gladly obeying. I don't know where you are in your heart of hearts. I know that many of you have made a trip to an altar and left the same after a week or a month, and you were perfectly sincere and you didn't understand what was wrong. Simple. You didn't take the cross and the yoke and the foot washing bowl that was there for you. All three are needed. No two, all three. And you have to take them before you can discover how to use them. Just like any other tool you buy, then you discover how to use it. You have to take the cross before you can know how to ply. You have to take the yoke and the foot washing bowl and discover how to use them. Would you come to the altar under those conditions again? The only kind of people who come to an altar like this, the altar of God, where we meet Jesus, give what we have got to him and take from him what he's got for us, are desperate people. People who say, "It's God. And I'm going to take what he's got, no matter what." And there is a certain desperateness in faith where a man flings himself on the Almighty at whatever cost it may involve. In future sermons and messages, I'm going to be giving you the practical outworkings of these things, but it really all amounts to one simple thing. Are you willing to go all the way, 100%, no matter what? Are you willing? And I've tried to help you see this morning some of the things that are going to be involved. Are you willing? If you are, the altar becomes a very meaningful place. The organist is going to play. Now I'm going to go back here to a counseling room, and I invite those of you who need to be ministered to this morning, who want to be ministered to this morning, and who want whatever your need is. Maybe it relates to this, maybe it doesn't. But you want all that God's got. I'm going to ask you to join me in that counseling room. And for those of you that have fought this battle in your own mind, like I did yesterday, you've made your decision. You understand the cost. You might need to come back there. You might just need to proclaim it. You can speak to one of these men at the altar. They're going to have just a few stanzas. And then close. It sounds tough, but it's wonderful when the release has been made. The cross is life. And the yoke is partnership. And Jesus said concerning the bowl, "Happy are ye if you do it." And so there's happiness in the bowl. And if you want him in the foot washing bowl, if you want him and his life and his partnership and the joy he gives, This is the outworking of accepting these things that must be inworked before they can be outworked. But I know that you know whether the Spirit is working with you or not, and secondly, whether you are willing to yield to that, to Him. So we invite you to come.